Welcome to Nail Tech Entrepreneur. My name is Andrea Pettingill, and in this episode, I interview business attorney Michael Glassford, and we talk about all the legal things. So whether you are starting your brand new baby business and you are ready to get into a salon, or if you're opening a studio, if you're opening a salon, all the things you need to consider, even if you're coming back to working at your home, some legal things to consider, as well as some interesting things you might not have thought of, like what not to post on Facebook, what kind of things contracts do to help protect you and your salon owner, and lots of other great things in today's episode of Nail Tech Entrepreneur. Okay, I should have moved it to my screen. Hello, this is Andrea Pettingill, and welcome. Today, I'm really excited to have a special guest on today. I have Michael Glassford, and I have some fun questions to ask him and help other nail techs out there who are working on building their business and taking it to the next level. And I asked Michael to come on because I have some legal questions and things that sometimes we just don't know the answers to. So Michael, go ahead, and I'm going to have you introduce yourself and like tell us a little bit about you and what you do. And let me just move the screen over to you. Go ahead.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk to you and your audience. I've been an estate planning and business attorney for the last 16 years. My focus is in both of those arenas. They really are, they go in hand to hand, and it's just planning for the future for both your business and your family. And so I kind of nerd out over it. I was actually challenged over the weekend to describe what I do in terms of Harry Potter, and I was successful at that. So I'm a bit of a nerd. I live on a homestead we call the Staffordshire. And I preach to, you know, you need to live the life you want to live. And my tagline specifically, it's your life, it's your story, make it a good one. And so, I have to live, I have to practice what I preach, right? So we live on a hobby farm and have cows and chickens and sheep and goats and a horse and five or six cats, depending on the day, right? You know, we have some visiting cats. But I live that lifestyle because it's the way I want to live. And then I teach my clients how they can not have a farm, but how they can live their lifestyle by simply having a plan in place, executing that plan, and then changing things up if it's not going according to plan. Because, you know, that's the beauty of business, is that we can do a little bit of trial and error. We want to have some mentors in our life, and we want to have some people that can help us set things up correctly. But then after that, it's kind of up to us.
Oh my gosh, that is so awesome. Let me see if I can do this. Okay, there we go. I love that, because that happens, that we change things up so much, but like we're not failing, right? We have to remember that we're learning and we're progressing. So I've worked in 7 different salons owned by other people. I've owned my own studio, I've owned my own salon, and I own my own studio again now. And it's just this ever evolving, changing thing. And as you go through your career, it's always going to be different, and you're going to learn what you like, what you don't like. And that contrast helps you to build just bigger and better every time and keep improving. Hopefully you're always liking the direction that you're going in, right?
Yeah. You definitely want to love what you're doing, but you gotta be okay with doing it differently if circumstances call for that. Like if you would have asked me in law school, hey, will you be producing your own videos and making Facebook promotions and things like that, I would have like throw punched you. I'm like, I'm going to law school to be a lawyer. I will be in court. It's just I'm doing what I love, but I'm not doing it the way that I thought I would.
Yeah. And being that flexible, right? That's funny. Mm-hmm. Okay, so business attorney, what does that mean? And what do you usually help people with in that arena?
So in that arena, I want to help a business. On the legal side of things, I want to help you set up your business correctly, you know, have the conversation of you know, doing business as a DBA or an LLC or an Inc., what even an S-Corp means, how that plays into things, because we have the legal side of your business. Then we have the taxable side of your business, and the language doesn't always match up. I'm not a tax expert, but I can definitely point you in the right direction and set you up legally correctly. So then you're ready for the next step, which is making sure that you're accounting for your business and playing fair, or not fair, but playing with Uncle Sam so that they'll be fair with you.
Yeah, kind of going in the right direction.
Correct. And then go ahead.
And
also that includes contracts, you know, managing expectations with your clients, with your the contractors that are coming in into your salon and working in your space. You know, we hear a lot that an attorney will write a contract to win in court, and that's great. I want to write a contract that you never have to go to court, because you manage expectations so well that you know what to expect. You know what's going to come from this thing. And if it doesn't go well, then you know, rule number two is that it needs to win in court. But let's stay out of court. That's more fun.
So let's circle back to your beginning your business, and we're deciding if we want to be. So first of all, letting our listeners know, okay, you know nothing, like talking, we're speaking to someone maybe who is coming into this field and from nothing, from not knowing anything about having their own entrepreneurial business. So the first thing is that they get to know, so I'll go ahead and let you explain that you get to set yourself up. So you were kind of hinting at that, like, are you a DBA? Are you an LLC and those other options? Because that's what I am. So that's what I know.
Correct.
But go ahead.
So yeah, that's the first conversation that you need to have. You know, we want to set up your business so it can be the most profitable, and it's not going to implode on itself because you haven't done something, you missed a step mm-hmm. somewhere. But in the state of Utah, we're required to register our business, whether that is a doing business as, you know, whatever the name that you want to do it as, or going further and setting it up as an LLC or incorporating. And we need to make that decision early on and see what's best for our business. Either way, we need to register with the state, and there's a state registration page. It's commonly known, and people know how much that it costs, or usually they know how much it costs to register. And they think that's all they do. That's
problematic. True. It's like when you go to register your business, you think you're just like claiming the name so no one else can take that name, right? But then also it's like there's more to it.
Correct. So in a DBA, that is all you're doing. You're claiming the name and doing business as, you know, hair salon business. That was really creative.
Drea Designs Beauty is mine. We can use that one.
What's that?
Drea Designs Beauty is mine. So we can use that
okay.
one.
So you've claimed the name Drea Designs Beauty and it's yours. And you're now registered. The state knows who you are. And if you need a tax number for selling items that are taxable for sales tax purposes, then you can get that number. You'll also have your EIN, your federal tax number. And so you're set up that way as a DBA. But then we move into the LLC, which again, you're claiming your name and you're registering with the state so that they know that you're an LLC. But that's like the, you know, the old adage, the bark and the bite and the bark of the dog, right? So we've barked it out to the world. We're an LLC. You know, we have a loud bark. It's now registered with the state. But how good's your bite? Because the state doesn't give you any teeth. The teeth come with forming your company, working with an attorney, making sure all of your documents that create the LLC are legitimate, and putting you in the best position to be successful and to grow.
So if someone had the question of like, well, maybe I don't know if they want to take the steps and they wanted to like eventually get there to having a LLC, would like the basics that they could do first just be that DBA, or even just, I don't know, registering as their first and last name?
So you can't register first and last with as a DBA in the state. They frown against that. Actually, they won't accept that designation.
Like, okay.
So you do have to have some kind of name. It's going to go on your 1040 as your business. So does your LLC in a Schedule C. So it's very similar, but the DBA isn't going to give you any of the protections that the government allows us to have. It's not going to give you the structure. It's not going to give you the tax benefits that an LLC is going to give you. And so it's just starting out. Maybe we have a hobby. Yeah. Maybe we're just kind of dabbling and we're going to DBA. But, you know, like anything else, it's worthwhile to invest in your business so that you are in a position to grow and develop. And I always give the example of Rome. And when they built Rome, they built all the infrastructure. They built the sewers and they built the streets. And then there may not have been a whole lot of people yet. And the question is, well, why do you build that stuff first? Well, the answer, when the stuff comes, it has somewhere to go. And so we want to create a little bit bigger. We want to be a little bit more than when our business is at the beginning by creating that LLC, by having the right things in place, because then we are able to grow. And when problems come, we can quickly figure them out because all of that stuff is in place.
That's so important. And I want to pause and just insert here, like, that's what this podcast is about, is taking yourself seriously as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, and making that room, like Michael said, for growth, instead of assuming that you'll fail, like noticing the difference there of being like, well, if I just like go under the table with things, or just, you know, have people pay me cash or whatever someone might do to just get around these kind of legal things, like, you're assuming you're going to fail. And if you're assuming you're going to win and go big and your business is going to be more than you ever imagined, then what actions that person would do would be to build that infrastructure, like Michael's saying, create that really protected legal structure to help your business be successful when the ups and downs come.
Absolutely. Definitely a mindset. You know, you're willing to invest in yourself. And I see it all the time. People will trip over dollars to save pennies. And
yeah.
it's a mindset that we need to let go of, because that's self-fulfilling prophecy. We'll do that our entire business. We want to invest in the thing that's like in the position to feed us and, you know, clothe us and put a home over our heads. And if we're not willing to take care of that, then we're kind of setting a really bad precedent right from the beginning. And not only that, you know, the worst thing for your business is to have no business.
There you go. You know,
that's death to business. But the second worst thing is to have to slow down momentum because you didn't do the things to build the business and be in a position to succeed. And no, wait, I got to slow down and form this LLC now, you know, so give me a couple months to figure that out. People aren't going to wait, you know.
Yeah.
Death to momentum is the second death to business.
Yeah. And if you see yourself going in that direction of like, someday I want to open my own salon, someday I want to have a team, selling products, having this brand name, having training facility, like whatever, these are just things I see my industry go in that direction. But like, just to be with that success mindset and moving towards what you want, towards your goal. So in the question of like setting up, and maybe we need a disclaimer of like, this isn't legal advice. You need your separate appointment with Michael to like, really, he needs to know your business. But as a general,
these are educational principles that are good to know.
Good to know, to maybe stir up questions for you so you know what to ask your person that you reach out for help. Or if reaching out to Michael, we could talk about that later, how to contact him. But when you're deciding between, because I know there's like sole proprietor and LLC, like, what's your advice to like those different things that you could go into and be like just basics?
So that kind of goes into the whole what's legal and what's tax language, and they don't jive together at the same time. So sole proprietor, it could be a DBA. Sole proprietor could be an LLC. So the tax designations are a sole proprietor, a single person, a partnership, and then corporation, and then S corp. So that's all that the IRS looks at. Are you one of those four?
Oh, okay.
And the sole proprietor could apply to a DBA, could apply to LLC. A partnership can apply to a DBA, could apply to LLC, and it could apply to a corporation. So it doesn't necessarily matter Don't get caught up in the terms. Get caught up in what you are creating, and then we can make the terms match what you're doing.
Cool. Okay. So, when someone, okay, let me look through my notes. When someone's getting a physical location, so now we're kind of jumping to that, they need to get set up with the business. So what, with their business, with the city that they're in. So mm-hmm. what would be their next step like in that?
So when we've created our business, then whether we have a physical location, whether we're working out of our home, whether we're working out of someone else's, you know, in a bay of someone else's, but the our home business is out of my home address, you need to have either an occupational or some kind of a licensing through the city to declare that that's where you're doing business. And so you work with the city that either where your shop is or where your home office is, and you get that occupational license. Most cities in Utah, if they're a smaller city, it's going to be a nominal to no fee. They just want to know that you're doing business there. Mm-hmm. If you have customers, clients coming to your home, that kind of elevates it a little bit. They want to know, okay, is there going to be parking issues? Is it going to be a nuisance to your neighbors? And those are a little bit harder of a license to get. You're going to get it, but you have to go through more steps and probably pay a little bit more. If it's a commercial space, then they're not so much worried about, clients coming because they expect that. But then there's usually a fee involved with that as well. So you just want to be informed on what the city municipality that you're in is expecting. And you can go onto their websites and look at occupational license or some kind of, whatever they've tagged it as. But that's what you're looking for. You want to have that license to work in the city that you're in.
Okay. And I want to kind of go to something that you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, because for 7 years, none of my owners told me to get my own license, business license, and I was working under their salon. So was that just bad practice on their part, or was that possibly something that wasn't necessary? And then, to answer that question.
It depends on your relationship with the salon. So if you are an LLC or a DBA and you're in a contract situation with them, it's a good idea to have your own occupational license. If you're an employee of the salon or they're telling you what to do, even though they're not calling you an employee, but that you really are an employee, less important.
Gotcha. So, okay. In my situations, I was my own like do come and go as you please, kind of do your own booth rental thing. But so if it's something more like a commission based salon contract with the owner, then you're working under their business license.
Well, anytime that it depends on the control. So if it's your business and you're keeping your own book of business and you're just using their space, then I would definitely recommend talking to the city. And it's always worth a conversation like, hey, this is my situation. I'm working with the salon. This is the amount of control they're exerting over me, but I'm keeping my own book of business. And they'll tell you, yeah, you're going to need it or no, you won't. But more often than not, it's something that's needed. We just assume that we're working under the business license of the other business, which could actually create liability for them and create liability for you by tying y'all together, but not necessarily being together. So it mm-hmm. would be a good conversation to reach out to the city that you're in and say, this is my situation. Does needing an occupational license apply?
Oh, that's cool. It's good to know that they're there to help you when you ask, when you just need those questions answered, like ask the city, like find out what's important for your specific situation.
And you might need to talk, find the supervisor, find the person that knows. Sometimes they may not know, if it's just mm-hmm. the front desk person that doesn't field that question all the time. But there is someone at the city that's definitely going to know.
Yeah. Is there anything specific to home salons, because you were started to talk about that, that you wish more people knew or did as they have their own business out of their home?
So the things that the city, again, are going to be very interested in is, you know, who's coming to your home? How many are coming? You know, are they all there at the same time? Is it just one at a time? Because that's going to create, you know, are they parking on the street? Or, you know, are you interested in signage at your home? And then we're looking at, you know, is it zoned for a commercial purpose, or is it just for residential? You know, do you have to go to the city and have a hearing to get your house changed in the zoning law so you can have that signage, so you can be an official business at your home? Or are you just going to keep it kind of cottage and no signage, nothing on the road, and then there's enough room in your driveway just like a regular guest? So it's, you know, all those variables are going to come into it, because the city's very concerned about, you know, neighbors calling and complaining, or you becoming a nuisance in some way. And they don't want that. But also because the client is in the home, there's additional liability, and they want to make sure that all those things are taken care of. Number one, so it doesn't blow back on the city, but two, it's just good business to make sure that the businesses that are operating in the city are doing it in the same scope as what's been prescribed.
The right way. Yes. Okay, so you have your business, you have your DBA or your LLC, and you're operating. Let's go over to, unless there's anything on those that you feel important to bring up again, but I kind of
just say before we leave that arena, you know, the next step is to talk about business licensing, and, you know, not licensing, but insurance, business insurance, to make sure that, you know, if you're having people over to your home, that it's no longer your homeowner's insurance. You need to actually have a business insurance plan in place, because if they're there, not as a guest, but as a client, and something happens, you could find your homeowner's policy saying, no, we're not going to cover that. So talking to a good business insurance person, having a good policy in place, if they're at your home or at your salon, you know, off in a commercial zone, that's always the next conversation. You know, we've got all of our license, and now next is, well, we also want to be, you know, state certified and all those licenses. And if you need to be on the Doppel site, then that's also something you need to talk about. But then finally, that insurance piece.
And that's something that's important to have in every situation we've talked about, right? Because when your salon owner might have you covered in a certain way, you might not be covered in a different way separately, right?
The salon owner, if you're in their bay, in their space, you know, they're covering the building, they're covering, you know, mishaps that happen in their building. But if the person gets injured in your space, their insurance might not cover that. You know, they might say, okay, what do you got?
Yeah.
Because if someone gets hurt, they sue everybody. They sue the person that was, you know, in the space, the actor, they sue the business, they sue the business that was housing the business, and they hope, you know, that one of them sticks. You know, we just want to be able to not be in that position. So we're in the best, you know, we've done all the things, we've set up all of the formations so that if someone is sued, that it minimizes the damages.
That's good to know that you just even just like randomly said it that way. It's like, this is how it usually happens, is they'll sue and sue and sue until it sticks. Like, so don't just think, oh, they're good, I don't have to do anything. Oh, that'd be so bad.
And everybody gets named. And so, I mean, that's one of the things to consider. Even when you create your LLC and you think, oh, I have a limited liability company, I'm safe. No, you're not. Because if you're the actor, you can't limit yourself from the dumb things that you do. So you will be sued individually if you're the actor, and your business will be sued. And so that's something to take into consideration. Limiting liability means that if your employee does something dumb that creates a liability, your name is off the line and your business is still going to be sued because they were an employee of the business. But now your personal name, your personal assets aren't involved. If you have that LLC, or the salon has their LLC and you're the actor, now they've got some buffer room. you know, for their personal assets, their business might be involved because you're renting space from them, but their personal name is protected. So you have to really sit down and see when the limited liability comes into play, because it may not be in play yet. And that doesn't mean that don't get it, but it just means it may not be in effect yet for you.
Awesome. Good to know. I want everyone out there to be like smart and protected on all fronts. So then going back to something you talked about earlier is contracts. So if you're in a position where you're dealing with if you're the owner dealing with booth renters, if you're having contracts for any situation, what are some smart business practices to consider when you're putting those together? How do you get those done? Like, what's the best way to go about having something that will actually help you in the purpose of why we even have them at all?
So the purpose for a contract is offer and acceptance. It's to manage the expectation of what you're providing and what someone's receiving. And we want to make sure that it's very clear and transparent that this is how we're going to do it. This is how it will go. And this is how it will go if things go wrong, because the contract is going to cover all of those sides of the story. And we're not looking for a contract that I win, you lose. We want to have a win-win contract, but we want to have that expectation set, you know, while we're all getting along. So while we're excited that you're going to be renting my booth, we're going to put some rules in place. Like, this is how you're going to use it. This is how you go too far. If you go too far, this is what happens naturally as a consequence.
I want to pause you because this is so important. People who are signing a contract. So maybe you're not the person who's creating a contract, but still listen up, because if you're being asked to sign a contract, this is for you as well. I was in a position where a salon owner shut the salon down and said, in 2 days, we're closed. And if we had a contract that she had to honor, she wouldn't have been able to put me out of business in 2 days notice. You know what I mean? So I hate when people get scared of signing a contract on the person being asked to side, because I always told my booth renters, like, this is for you as much as it is for me, and all those things you just said. So sorry, go ahead and keep going.
No, definitely contract is protecting all parties to be, you know, that are signing, that are involved. But a lot of times I see people shy away from any kind of contract negotiation because they think negotiation means conflict. Mm-hmm. And it's just not so. Negotiation means that everyone gets what they need, and we create a contract where, again, it's a win-win for all parties. The salon's going to win because they're getting some revenue. The booth wins because now they're in a position to make some money. It's a win-win, you know, and how that falls down and what it looks like, you know, it can be one-sided or it can be for both parties. But we want to consider that those things, and we want to consider if the salon or whoever we're contracting with isn't willing to listen to our suggestions or our negotiations, you might want to consider not doing business with them. Maybe they've downloaded a contract and they don't know how to change it, so they're not willing to negotiate with you because they don't know, you know, I can't change it. I don't know how to do that. I'm not paying enough for an attorney. That could be problematic because that means that contract is inferior. They downloaded it. Never download a contract because it was written for someone else. It was written for the intent and purpose of something else, and it doesn't necessarily match your expectations and your designs. And if it's incongruent with what you need, then you will find yourself in court. You will find yourself with a problem because it wasn't the right contract for you.
That's so important because I'm sure that happens a lot. And then you just kind of are out of luck.
Well, you're out of luck when you made that decision. So, and contract negotiation is also a great opportunity to get to know the other party. Like, if they're willing to have that conversation, yeah, we're open to that. Let's talk about that. Now you're seeing how they'll do conflict resolution, how they'll work with you, how they won't work with you. And that's, you're interviewing them just as much as they're interviewing you to say, do I really want to be a part of this relationship?
That's so important. And to just kind of set emotions aside and just be like, let me look at the facts here. This is not a fight right out of the gate. This is negotiation, not conflict. I love how you said that. I think in general, we like shy away from conflict because it just seems like a fight.
And well, conflict is no fun, but negotiation can be a whole lot of fun. And there's a lot of good books out there on it. And my favorite is Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss.
Ooh, I'm going to read that. Never Split the Difference.
He's an FBI, a former FBI agent. And if he splits the difference on a hostage negotiation, that means two of the hostages of the four die. So he could never split the difference. But his philosophy on negotiation is just pretty darn awesome. And, you know, for a long time, the book Getting to Yes was the seminal negotiation book. But this Never Split the Difference is so much better. And it's good for every business owner to read because it just puts you in that mindset. And there's some really great tools that you can use that he teaches that will help you not only in your contract negotiation, but just in working with people in general.
Yeah. That's good.
As the service that you provide, you are up close and impersonal with your clients, and it's a really good idea to form good relationships with them and not antagonistic relationships with them.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people have hard times coming up with their own policies and stuff as far as when people cancel, when people pay, like have just like problems with appointments or anything like that. And those skills are really good. I've seen people have arguments with their clients on text messages and just like when you're able to communicate clearly and be heard and hear them and have that back and forth, it's such a powerful skill to have.
And it's all going to depend on your situation. And I love that you brought that up about, you know, the cancellation policy, things like that. Those are specific to your business, you know, and you got to decide, like, as a lawyer, am I going to, you know, charge you $100 if you don't show up to an appointment? Cause you know, it's going to cost me $300 cause we didn't do business together. There's that side of things, but also, okay, well, that's an hour that I can have in quiet work. So I'm not so upset when someone doesn't show up, you know what I mean? And how's that going to affect the client? You know, you've got to decide where you're going to take a stand, what's important, why it's important. And if there's an alternative to make, you know, lemonade out of that lemon.
Can you, just speaking from a legal side, like it's perfectly legal to charge whatever you want to charge for that kind of a cancellation policy and keep a credit card on file. You know, people in my industry do that kind of thing.
So that's like kind of a loaded question. One, yes, you can contract to agree to anything. And so you can tell people my policy is, you know, $75 cancellation fee and they've been notified. There was terms of use. They, you know, they're on the line for that. And so you're going to charge that. Especially if you've collected their credit card and you're doing, you know, number one, you got to be in that compliance with the credit card industry and rules, and you've got to hold that information safely.
Yeah. And there's apps for that. I think a lot of people use like Square has options to do that.
Yeah. So if you're holding that information, make sure that you do it correctly, that you're not just got it on a pad of paper somewhere in your documents on your computer, because that will get you in trouble. But if they've given you your card, and so that means that they've read some terms and use and agreed to that, then it's completely okay to charge whatever that you've told them that you're going to charge for a cancellation. Yeah. You don't want to just arbitrarily come up with, well, that you really hurt my feelings when you didn't show up the other day, so I'm going to charge you $150 for that one.
This is all a part of taking your business seriously and setting things up from the get-go and not randomly.
But if you're in a position where, you know, if someone doesn't show and you could take a walk-in, then you really haven't lost an opportunity. You know, the client will appreciate that they don't have to worry about that, because life does happen. Or you have a policy, okay, no shows are charged for, you know, for no showing, but if you call within a couple hours and, you know, give me a good song and dance, it will be okay.
Yeah, so that's a good depends. Point. It's like, you know, if you're still the owner of your business and you can tell them as part of customer service, this is my policy. Thank you for telling me that happened today. I'm going to go ahead and waive the fee today. You can do that. Absolutely. But I think that's great.
Like, you know, I had an appointment with someone the other Monday and it, that just happened to be the day I needed to take my dad to the nursing facility that he's going to live in for the rest of his life. It was kind of a big day. And, you know, the people could have been upset with me that I didn't come to their appointment. I called them and said, I can't come. I just found this out. They could have they could have hit me with a fee, or, you know, they could have done what they did and said, oh, I'm so sorry. We'll see you next week.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes a long way with people.
Absolutely. Especially when it's an emotional reason for the client.
Yes. Yes.
And most reasons are emotional for the client. Let's just be honest.
This is true. Okay, Michael. So I just want to ask in general, if there's anything, closing thoughts that you would say in any of these topics that you would just want to make sure that people know about or that people consider, or just some ideas for people. Or I love that you suggested a couple of books, and I'll put those in the notes for this episode as well. But go ahead if there's any last things.
So I would say, you know, when you're a business person and you're operating a business, you want to, number one, treat it like a business. If at any moment it feels like a hobby, then you need to reevaluate what you're doing and how you're doing it. Because if you're going to be professional, then let's act like a professional. And that comes across in your mindset. It comes across in how you're treating your clients. It comes across in how you set up your business and your contracts and all of that. So that's step one. And then step two is, don't hesitate to find out the answer. And Google isn't always your friend. But if there's a question, a burning question in your mind, call the professional. You know, be willing to you know, pay a couple of bucks for that phone call or whatever. In my situation, I believe that a client needs to have that burning question answered. So much so that I don't charge for those phone calls. Like, I want my clients to know that they can just call me, they can text me, and they can get that burning question answered. Now, if the burning question is part of a larger project, like let's form an LLC, or we need a contract, or we've got to figure something out, and it's like a jam session, then, you know, I can say, all right, well, that will be X, you know, it'll have a cost to it. And we can get together when appropriate and do that. But at least the answer, the burning question was answered. Because if you don't get that gut, you know, when you have that gut feeling, like, I just need to know this, but you just make the decision anyway, that's when you get in trouble. That's when you get sued. That's when things fall apart. And fixing it later is always more expensive than preventing it at the beginning.
That's always. What we forget, right?
And that's where we, you know, trip over dollars to pick up pennies again. You know, just remember that fixing it later, you know, being in a lawsuit or being in a fight or being in an arbitration, is always more expensive than having just avoided it completely in the first place by just being prepared.
I love that so much. Thank you so much. And I will go ahead and put any contact information, because if there's people listening to this and they're like, I'm a nail tech, that's why I'm not a lawyer, like, and all of this was overwhelming, and they're probably just wanting to reach out to you, how do they do that? And I can also put your info in the notes.
But so you can call or text my office number, which is 801-610-6691. You can go onto my website. It's www.legallifeplan.com. Now, the website is heavy on estate planning, but there's ways to connect with me, to schedule a phone call with me, and we can talk business as well. But like I said in the very beginning, I'm in the business of planning with clients, whether that's your estate plan or your business plan. It all just kind of goes into
the business of life or otherwise. Yeah. I love it.
And, you know, there's things that we can do with estate planning to protect that solo entrepreneur, so they do have protection, even though they're a solo LLC. So there's lots of strategies out there. We just have to find the right one for you and your business. A lot of people will try to oversell you and try to put you in a model that does work, but it's not going to work for you because it's too complex, or it's just not time. So it's just worth having the conversation and figuring out what you need to do and move forward.
That's so good. I think an overarching theme to this episode was, like, just find out the next little bit of information and don't be afraid to do so. Reach out, ask, just move forward, go that direction that you need to take your business and take it seriously.
Just be careful with who you're asking too. You know, you can ask another tech and they could give you great information, or they could give you horrible information, but they've never been in trouble themselves. So, like, take everything with a grain of salt. I mean, even with attorneys. So, you know, you just need to take all the information that you receive, weigh it, judge it, and then make the best decision. But you got to consider the sources too.
That's super important.
Never take information from Facebook because that's the worst.
Not from Facebook, yeah.
That's the court of public opinion, and that will fry you every time.
To randomly post, everybody give me your opinion. And yeah, that's kind of
scary. you can collect opinions and you can see what's going on, but that's
filter it.
You gotta really filter that one and consider the source. And also never publish your legal issues on Facebook, because that's admissible. Like if you're like, I'm having this problem with this client and here's the situation, da, 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 that all could come back in your face because it was a public admission. It's admissible in court. So be careful what you write on the social medias.
Yeah, I see that a lot. I see people complaining because they want that validation from the other people who are like, I can't believe they did that to you.
But the person that's suing you can take that rant and then use it in court saying, look, they admitted to it.
Wow, that's scary. So, that's why we talk to smart people like you.
I've just been around the block a few times.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time so much, Michael. I won't keep you any longer. And thank you guys all for listening and watching, if you're watching this on YouTube. And have an amazing rest of your day. And I will see you on the next episode. Thanks. Bye, guys. Thank you so much for listening. I'm going to go ahead and put the books that Michael mentioned and the website and his office number in the show notes. And I just wanted to remind you that in September, I will be taking a few spots for one-on-one coaching clients. If you would like to apply or just have a free business audit and just would love someone in your corner to have to bounce ideas off of and have that business coach right there for you to help you in your nail business, I would be honored to learn more about your business. If you go to www.dreadesignsbeauty.com, you can click the button to have a business audit and we can get started chatting about your business. And you can also find that link in my bio in Instagram at dreadesignsbeauty. Thank you, and I'll see you on the next episode of Nail Tech Entrepreneur.